Welcome to the Automate and Grow podcast.
Okay, we're here for a special edition of the Automate and Grow podcast. I'm here with Melanie Johnson from Elite Online Publishing. And Melanie and I met again through the Grant Cardone 10X Ambassador Program. So she was a participant in that program and also attended the 10X Growth Con in Las Vegas. So Melanie, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks, Michael, for having me. I really appreciate it.
No problem. So a couple of things, I guess. One, you for the last 3 years have been working really in your own author publishing business. And I wanted to talk to you about that as a relatively new author myself. It sounds like you've had a tremendous amount of success. So tell me about how you decided to get into this line of work, first of all.
Well, you know, my background is TV. So I started out as a newscaster in Detroit, and then my husband and I filed for a TV station down in Houston, Texas.
Oh, wow.
And we started a television station from scratch, an independent television station from the FCC. So we built it from the ground up, transmitter, tower, news, and we were all news. So I built a whole news station. I was in charge of the news department. I was vice president of the company. We ran a $100 million business. We started, bought another TV station in Dallas. So we had two major TV stations in Texas. And it was probably one of the most fun, challenging, thrilling things I'd ever done, is starting a business like that from scratch and getting it to work and getting it to cash flow. And then, you know, life changes. I ended up getting divorced, and then we sold that business. And I really looked at the internet as the future. I really didn't think I wanted to get back into TV, because I saw TV really declining, and almost anyone could have their own TV or radio station. I mean, look at us.
Right.
We're having a radio station here today.
This would have cost millions of dollars before, right?
Exactly. I mean, millions what we had to start for the TV. So I just thought that was the cool way to go. And I had two monster houses. I had a 25,000 square foot house in Houston and a 13,000 square foot house in
13,000?
Yeah. So what? I had a lot of real estate, okay?
Holy smokes. That's crazy.
So when we got divorced, he kind of made the business go upside down and left me in a lurch. So I figured out how to monetize those houses while I was trying to keep them alive and away from the bank. And I created the HoustonMansion.com and WallenLake.com. And I ended up renting those homes and had a six-figure business. All with online traffic. So then the house is finally sold. And then I had nowhere to live. You know, I had to buy a new house. And I was out of a job. So I started doing real estate development, but also during that time, always kept my foot in the door of going to marketing and internet and digital things going on in the world, and learned how to publish and started publishing a book. And then a friend of mine there, we got together. I have this timeshare that I use for charities down in the Dominican Republic. It's a villa down there. And she's like, man, we need to monetize your villa. It can't just be for fun. Let's do a book writing retreat down there. So during the breaks of this conference, we created the website, we did a video, we created a Facebook page, and we launched Hot Chicks Write Hot Books on the Beach. Hot Books on the Beach.
Oh, I thought you said Hot Chicks Write Books on the Beach.
Yeah, pretty much. Hot Chicks Write Hot Books on the Beach.
Wow. All right.
We had our first successful book writing retreat down in the Dominican Republic, and we just thought, hey, it'll be fun to do it like once a year. Well, I came home and oil started crashing, and people started saying, hey, I didn't know you could publish books. And so people started asking me to publish their books. And the book business started to take off. You know how God kind of puts things in your life and things just happen to you and you start going with it. So the Elite Online Publishing was born. And since then, we have over 50 titles that have become best-selling authors, 50 authors we've made number one on Amazon. We have authors that have left their sales job and became a consultant and speaker, and they now make $12,000 every time they go out.
Amazing. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, that's what I love about it. You see the metamorphosis in someone transform once they have a book. And what we do is really teach them how to leverage their book as an advertising tool. With my background in TV, you realize, I mean, I sold airtime, but it evaporates. Like, you have a commercial and then it's gone.
Right.
That's why when I send someone a proposal for a book, I call it an investment, because you really don't invest in TV advertising or invest in a billboard because it evaporates. but a book never goes away.
Very
right?
True.
Always. And you can always update it. You can use it in so many different ways to promote your business, whether you're giving it away or using it as a lead funnel. Use it when you're speaking. We tell some people, hey, you want everyone to know who you are at a certain company? Send a book to every single person in the office on the same day.
That makes sense. And it's like the overwhelm of, hey, look, did you get yours?
Everybody in that office is talking about the book, including if you send one to the owner, what an impact that makes, right? So we go through like 20 different ways for people to use their book. And then on top of that, we have another division of our company where we have over 1,500 titles of our own imprint from Elite Online Publishing that we've launched. So it's been a really fun business and a fun journey. My business partner is Jen Foster, and she lives in Salt Lake City, and I'm in Houston.
Wow.
And we're single moms. She's got three kids. I've got two kids, and we just make it work.
That's incredible. So you've built I didn't realize, and we talked quite a bit before we came on, but I didn't even get to the point where you had a TV station. So now you have also created your own podcast, which is kind of like where you're leveraging your broadcast experience. And what's that process been like?
That has been, I recommend like everyone should have a podcast. There was a guy that I connected with on the plane, and we're helping him build a sales funnel. And he's like, oh, let me ask you, should we have a podcast? I noticed everyone at 10X, every speaker at 10X had a podcast.
Right.
Should I have a podcast? And the answer, yes. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of time. For us, we've used it to be able to get in front of people. So it's worked both ways. It brands us, number one. So you get your message out there, you get to send emails to people and let them know that, hey, I've got this cool information that's useful to you. So it gives you an excuse to be in front of your list. And then on top of it, you can create business opportunities. So we have closed deals with people that we've interviewed, and we even had someone that we interviewed that they closed us on a deal. We bought.
Wow, that's amazing.
It can work both ways.
And then... How long have you been doing the podcast? Is that the same? Is it also 3 years, or is it relatively new?
A bit less, but about 2 years.
2 years.
Podcast, yeah.
And then,
Stitcher Radio, and now on Alexa.
Great, and then we played with your Alexa skill, and that works really well. So that's awesome. I love that. And it's funny because whenever I go to speak, I ask people, "How many of you use Alexa?" Because I want to let them know that. You don't have to like open up an app. You can just use your Alexa and get my podcast. But it's funny. The response has been really different. Like I think I had one person at my last event in New York that used it. So I'm starting to learn about that ecosystem just as far as like what the actual install base is. But I do think it's significant. I just don't think people understand why they own it.
Yeah, it's growing. You know, I don't know all of this. Like your phone. Do you really know everything your phone does? So you get those emails from Alexa all the time. Hey, this is what's new on Alexa.
That's true.
And I use maybe 1% of what it's capable of doing.
And I don't know if you follow Gary Vaynerchuk, but he's like all in on voice. So he views that as a growth thing. I agree with him. So I'm definitely I'm excited about the possibilities there. As a loyal Alexa guy, I think I have like 8 Echoes in different houses. So if you guys need an Echo, you can call me. I probably can give you one. So tell me about some of the authors that you have, and one, you know, stuff that maybe is exciting to you that is coming up or that you've worked on. What sort of people have you had that work with you?
So we've got all different types of people. And what's interesting is you think, well, if you're not in Houston or Salt Lake City, you need somebody local. We have clients. Currently, we've got a guy, Jay Lucas. His book is coming out. He's running for Senate up in New Hampshire.
Okay.
Mika Mosbacher, she was from Houston, but she lives in D.C., and she is a spokesperson on Fox News and PBS, and she's real involved in the Republican Party. And, you know, we don't mix sides. We're very non-partial. So we have another guy we're talking to who's running for Congress here in Houston for a Democrat. And so we have people from all walks of life. We've got an author down in the Bahamas, Melissa Hall. She's phenomenal. We have another one in California. We've got one up in Virginia. So we have clients all over the country. So I laugh. I say, I have some people I've never met in person. I just talk to them on phone or via Zoom or Skype.
Yep.
And so we work with everybody. And it doesn't matter where you are in your process, if it's just an idea or you already have your book written, or you have it just outlined. And so many people struggle with, oh my gosh, I don't want to have to write a book. Like, it's daunting, right? Even for you, you were saying, man, Grant inspired you to get your book done sooner and to kick it out.
Right. And, he did his first book, he said, in 3 days. And I was like, well, my plan was 30, so I should be able to hit this.
We don't want it to be overwhelming. So a lot of people are talkers but not writers. Mm. So one of the great ways to get your content out is you can speak your content. You know, you talk about your business at dinner parties all the time.
Right.
And you can tell someone exactly who you are. You tell it to clients all the time. So if you can just record that, organize it, and then we'll send it to a ghostwriter, have it transcribed and make it into a book for you. And another great way is if you have a blog post or a newsletter. So there are these couple of guys. They had this blog post they've been writing for a while, and they decided to take the best of their blog post and turn it into a book.
Smart.
So not a lot more work, right? They picked out the blog post, sent it to the editor ghostwriter. They put it together. They slapped an intro on it, and then they launched the book. Then guess what? The book became a movie called The Minimalist.
What?
Here, they started with the content from the blog.
Wait, The Minimalist is a movie? I thought that was a TV show.
So they made a movie called The Minimalist. I think it's on Netflix. So we are really...
I definitely have to check that out.
So we did that as well. We had our podcast when we first started it, and we took the first 30 podcasts, edited them down, and we made a book out of it.
Amazing.
So they interviewed authors about their tricks and tips on creating books and marketing books, and created a book. So it's the same content, use it over and over again. So that's why we say, even with your podcast, we like to do a video one, because then you get the audio for iTunes and Stitcher and Alexa, but then you have a video that you can put on YouTube, you can use it on social media. It just gives you so many other places to repurpose that same content, and you did it once and use it over and over again.
That's amazing. So, and I put a video out recently, which I'll post up in the show notes, about kind of what my process was to hit this. And I stretched it out to 45 days because I went back and cleaned it up. But I kind of explained what my process was. And it's funny that you mentioned the dictation part, because what I would do is, there were some days where your brain gets like really overloaded, because I was going brute force, right? And my goal was 150 pages in my book. But that was Apple pages. So when you formatted it, what it ended up being was a 260-page book, right? And a 6x9, right? But there were days, so I didn't realize how much content I was actually producing in a short amount of time. And there's days where I was stuck, and I was like, no, I got to do 5 pages. So there were some days where I put together almost like a keynote presentation, and then I read it, and then I sent it off to rev.com.
Perfect.
Yeah. Although I will say that the content on those days was needed to be mostly edited.
Need
to be cleaned up, but it gave you bulk, right?
yeah. It's easier to edit than to start from scratch with that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Something to work with, then you can. And then here's a tip too, for if you feel like, oh my gosh, I've got to have 250 pages. Well, we tell people, you know, short books are good too.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you have a minimum of 135 pages, that's all you need. Because 135 pages, you can have the name on the spine. If it's less than that,
that makes sense.
Name on the spine. If you have it 135 or more, then you get the name on the spine.
And that's 135 6x9, like formatted? Yeah. Uh-huh. Got it. So it's probably what, like 80 pages in Word or something?
Something like that.
Maybe? I'm guessing. That's amazing. Well, I love hearing about these stories, because you probably have like non-traditional authors that are understanding the power of writing a book. And I've had this theory, and you know, we've both recently been through a program that included sales training. And my going back, I'd written, actually funny enough, I'd written a book on sales about 12, 15 years ago, and I never published it because I don't think these tools existed then. So I almost feel like I need to go back and find that and probably rewrite parts of it. But
content already out there that's not being used.
It's like sitting on a disk somewhere, and I don't know where the disk is. I know where the disk is. It's in storage. But
a guy in our community that had kind of the same thing, like a book kind of sitting on the shelf, and the community of 10X.
Mm-hmm.
And so he pulled it out, cleaned it up, and then he did a sales funnel. He got 273 people in our Facebook community to opt in, and then he sold like 10 people.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm slacking. I've been like resistant to tell people about it. That's interesting. I need to go back and hit the hit that list. What was interesting about, I think one of my philosophies in sales at the time is that there's different generations of sales methodologies, and that people buy from who they trust, and the people they trust the most are experts. And so the idea, you know, behind writing a book, I think what you're saying is that, you know, you can demonstrate that expertise with a book.
Right. Casey, I remember when I wrote my first book, I had gone to a party at Saks Fifth Avenue, a social gathering for a nonprofit. And they're like, Melanie, I haven't seen you in a long time. You know, what have you been doing? I said, well, I just finished a book. And I did not expect the response. Oh, my gosh, you've written a book? Really? What's it called?
It's crazy, right?
It was.
Can you sign it for me?
Yeah. People, yeah. I did not expect it. And, you know, you get in your community of other authors and in the marketing and you think, oh, well, a lot of people are writing a book. But outside of that bubble, there's not a lot of people that are doing it. And the regular everyday people, they are just blown away that you've become an author. And really, like I said, we our goal is to make every single author we work with a number one bestseller. And when you tell them, oh, yeah, and I'm a best-selling author, they're like, oh, my gosh. Then it just, like, raises to a whole nother level. And then we have to tell our authors, like, they go, I can't believe I'm a bestseller. Like, it doesn't hit their head. And we got to go, all right, well, what does a number one bestseller walk into a room like? Like, you need to have that extra confidence. You need to own it.
Makes sense.
You know, because you've got people who are going to perceive you this way, so you need to own that.
So I think one of the – so what I did for myself was I did a little tour, right? So WeWork was amazing. So I don't know if you know what WeWork is, but the co-working – they have like over 200 co-working locations. They're kind of like the most valued startup that's out there. They're worth like $20 billion now. And they gave me free space wherever I went. So they have 17 locations in LA and they have 43 in New York. And then I have a lot of network in San Francisco and in Toronto. And they gave me space to do book signings in each of those locations. And I think the biggest adjustment for me was showing up and people going, two things that I had to get out of my own mindset on was, oh, will you sign it for me? And I'm like, no, why would you want me to sign a book? That seems silly. Like, I don't get the point. Like, But I immediately clued in that everybody loves to have the author to sign it. So I think there was like a thing where, you know, you kind of pointed it out. It's like, get out there, bring the right mindset to when you show up to those events, like walk in like a bestseller. And I had to change that because I'm not real focused on me. I'm more focused on the ideas in the book.
Right.
But that was a big adjustment to go in and make sure that you do a good job of signing. I probably did too good of a job signing. I was probably like too personal with each message, you know. I almost needed to shorten it down probably, but it was interesting. You know, you kind of mentioned how you walked in the room and everybody's excited about it, right? So.
Yeah, and also your autograph has value. Like yesterday, you were selling and saying the exact same thing on a different format.
Right.
But now all of a sudden it has more perceived value and your autograph on it has a perceived value.
Very, very true. And I've never been one to get autographs. I guess I've always had exposure to people that give autographs, like whether it's sports people. And, you know, I work in hockey and I don't know. Hockey players are very humble guys generally, you know, and they're all about the team because that's how you're successful in hockey, right? And I've never, ever asked anyone for an autograph, I don't think, since I was a kid. Because I'm always like, oh, that's nice, you know, I'm just happy to meet you. Like, it's good. But it's one of those things you had to get over as an author. I think it's a value add for the people you connect with. So,
well, the other thing we say because of that value and, you know, that credibility that you get all of a sudden is that you can raise your prices. So if you raise your price, just, you know, usually 5% is not that noticeable. So once you have that book out, especially if you're a bestseller, then you should raise your price 5%.
Interesting.
That goes along with, you know, the value that you're bringing and the credibility that you have in the marketplace now.
Wow, that's amazing. And then you'd mentioned to me, and I think you kind of alluded to this since we've been recording, but you have like 1,500 of your own titles now that are out there. So I don't know if you want to talk about that, like what that experience has been like and what that's brought to you.
You know, it's really been an amazing experience. I was at a mastermind group and they talked about one of the books we had, we should make a journal for it to go along with it because it's called How to Write Your Life legacy. Mm-hmm. And so it has a bunch of questions that are prompts in it. They said, you should make a journal, blank journal, to go so people have extra room with the same cover. I thought, oh, that's a great idea. And then the book started to sell, and it was like an addiction. All of a sudden, Jen and I just got like, oh my gosh, like if we put more books out, more journals. And so we started doing some research and finding different niches in journals and getting mentored in it. And one thing led to another, and we just came up with a system, and we just have just been crushing it. So our goal this year is to add another 2,000 titles.
Holy smokes.
Blank journals, we have fitness journals, we have prayer journals, we have planners, which is kind of a funny story. So it was a year and a half ago, was one of our first things that we put out there. I was inspired by Grant Cardone. He was talking about his 10X journal.
Right.
So I did his 10X journal, and I made something kind of similar to it. And we have a series of those on Amazon. So they're elite planners. They're called Elite Online Publishing. It's under our thing called the Daily Planners. And we have a whole series of them, and it's about writing your goals in the morning, doing a little exercise thing, hitting your targets, your successes for the day, and then writing your goals at night. And then it has a place to put your appointments and things like that. So we kind of started with that. And then Jen had this epiphany. She was visiting a resort that her uncle owned, these little cabins. And she, driving home, she goes, I've had this epiphany. I think we should do guest books. So I'm like, all
right. Guest books. Oh, right. Okay. So like I go to a location and I sign into the guest book.
Like for Airbnb and VRBO places. And
right.
And so we started with a cabin guest book because she stayed at cabins, and then she said, let's do one for each state. So we just have crushed the guest book industry. We have in the funeral guest books.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Wedding shower guest books.
What?
So baptism guest books. So we've just like started to try, and we're taking the 10X rule and saying, let's just try and dominate those categories.
Oh my God, yeah, that's amazing. That's really interesting.
And it is addictive because you go on every morning and you check and say, how many books did we sell today? You know, it's like cool to see how much it's grown from last year to this year. And, oh, we made a little money today. That's nice.
That's
cool,
right? That's amazing.
It's good passive income.
So as far as the future, it sounds like what you're saying is everyone that's, you know, I see this sea change of people that are going from working for someone else to freelance. And I think for a long time, because, you know, there's this overemphasis upon branded education, right? It's like, get a degree, go get a good job. And that's, you know, very successful for a lot of people. But those companies are cluing in that they can automate things and they can put software in place. And a lot of those jobs are becoming, like, not as valuable. And they don't want to invest in people that way. So I think what the stats are is that by 2030, it's going to go from 110 or 120 million people that are working for someone, and 64 million freelancers to 87 and 84.
Wow.
So I think what you're describing is that, you know, suddenly you've got all these people that are choosing, probably, I think, the better people, and then it's going to be the better people, and then the people at the bottom, they're going to be, you know, out in the street doing their own thing. And these guys will probably figure it out, and these guys are like, you know, fire hose reluctantly out there, right? But a book, it sounds like what you're saying, is a way to demonstrate what your expertise is, and is kind of that, you know, the new calling card in a sense.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's just to set, everyone has knowledge in something, and so you can set yourself apart. The other thing I'm finding out is I've had several friends that are 45 years old to 48 years old, and for whatever reason, they've lost their job.
Mm-hmm.
They left their job willingly, or you know, one of them, the company closed up, and so they were very good at what they did, and they are having the hardest time finding employment.
It's different
because they're telling, oh, well, you're the nice way to say that you're too old, they just say you're overqualified.
Oh, for sure, absolutely. And I mean,
what are they
your bulk of experience is worth less now in that environment, right? Because mm-hmm. they invest heavily in training, but also, to your point, like there's financial weight that goes with this. And that's kind of why I see, to your point, like they're out in the street, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I need new skills to package me, or I sit there like I'm not going to do anything, right?
Yeah.
So yeah,
you have to repackage. So the one guy, he applied for 700 jobs.
What?
700 jobs.
Can you imagine if he made 700 cold calls?
Yeah. I mean, he sent resumes out. He made calls. He was even, they were opening up a new hotel. He was a medical recruiter, and they were opening up a new hotel locally. He was the first one in line at 6 a.m.
What?
And he didn't even get a call back.
But why, you know, see, this is the mentality that kind of blows me away, where if you made 700 cold calls with your book, what results would you get?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I'm holding an event. I'm not the guy at your event. I think that's what people need to clue in. It's funny that it's that age that we have to clue in, but even the kids, I think, there's way more opportunity where if you made 700 calls to your target audience, would you get 1% or 5% callback? You would get 7 to 10 opportunities to come out of that, right? That would be paying clients or something. Like, it seems...
You only got really only one job offer.
Wow.
Took out of all of that.
Man.
So thing is, those people are going to have to transition and go into different fields, that like real estate, consulting,
something.
There's no barrier to entry,
right?
And create your own niche by writing a book, show your expertise, and then turn it into a consulting business or something.
Because, makes sense.
At 45, you can't get a job. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the big message that I hope people take away from that is that it's not hopeless, but you've got to change your mindset. You've got to realize there's bigger opportunity and money. You have to take responsibility for, as Grant Cardone says, build your own economy, right?
Yes, build your own economy. That's so true. I'm trying to teach my kids that.
Good, now. Good.
I still want them to go to college, but I think they have to build their own economy.
I have very definitive ideas about education. Well, and it's,
that might be a whole other podcast.
It's definitely something. It might be an event that we can invite you to that. And so just to switch gears a little bit, we both were in the 10X Ambassador Program. What was kind of your takeaway from that, and what was your experience? Because that was like a 60-plus day mentoring program with some virtual coaching. And what was your feedback on that?
My favorite thing was the Facebook group. Mm-hmm. I've never been in a Facebook group that's been so interactive, so pumped up, so ready to go. So everybody's in different time zones, right? So
yep.
I'm in the central time zone. And by the time I woke up, and the deal is wake up before the sun.
Right.
It's one of the things that they're saying, wake up before the sun, get your goals written, get your exercise in. And so when I would wake up, people were already up. So from the other time zone, they're like, hey, I'm up. I got my workout in. I'm 10Xing. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And if you didn't get up, you just feel like a slacker already. So it's like, man, they're already moving. They're like, I got to pull and I got to get this stuff going. And I want to say, I just did the math on how many proposals we sent out in the last 60 days. We've sent about 30 proposals out.
Damn.
In 60 days.
Wow. That's crazy.
Shocked. That's like every other day we were sending a proposal
out. Yeah, that's amazing.
So, I mean, it's just, I think that was so motivating. Being in that group was the biggest thing about it that I got out of it. And the training from the Cardone Union was pretty good. I like listening to that. The thing I didn't like about it is you had to take tests. After I
was like, seriously?
It was good content.
If you look at my test scores, it probably reflects how I took those tests.
Yeah.
It's like, nope. Oh, really? I learned from the test. That's bad.
Like, if you don't pass,
yeah, that's why I was just like, you're lucky you couldn't, you're almost lucky I wasn't allowed to forward through some of the videos, because it's like, okay, I'm just going to do this test cold. That was kind of how I was doing them. And I'll learn from how the test is coming back to how I should answer sometimes. But I think you miss a little bit out of that. There's some really good material in that for me as well. I think initially, as I think I mentioned to you off camera, that the basic stuff wasn't exciting to me, but there's definitely some newer stuff on follow-up and prospecting and building lists, and that I gathered a lot of benefit from, for sure.
You know, if you go through different sales training, like I've been through Keller Williams sales training,
mm-hmm.
a lot of it is always is the same. There's the same core through
sure.
a lot of stuff. It's, you know, getting leads, get as many leads as you can, follow up with those leads, you know, connect with them, and then turn them into clients.
Right.
So the lead you have, it's that sales funnel. So you've just got to make those calls and make the follow-up calls. And I think it's so cool. We were talking about artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't keep up with technology. It's like all the different ways to follow up. There's another layer in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Keller Williams is pretty cool too. They have a whole system for you with your emails. And it even tells you, like, okay, today you're sending an email, today you're sending a gift.
Oh,
today
wow.
You're sending a call, and here's your script for your phone call.
Right.
So, they give you a script for your phone call, and then, okay, next day, here's the email that's going to go out for you.
So they're doing the assisted sale, decision support, really, is kind of what they call that, where it's prompting you. And it's giving you the reminders, you're saying.
Well, no, it actually does it for you.
Oh, you're kidding. It's telling you this is what's happening.
Yeah, so in smart. You have a Microsoft or Kajabi, right, and you have your load up. So it has, you say, okay, I want to do this sales funnel. And in the sales funnel, it already has the emails that'll go, let's say it's going to send 8 emails out over the course of a month or 2 months. And then in between the emails, it has prompts and it says, okay, today, we're not sending an email, but you're supposed to call and here's your call script.
Yep. That you're supposed to call. I love it. That's amazing. And that's kind of the stuff that we help companies with. So on the cloud advisory side, we're so one of the things they did in that group was they have the grant 365 follow-up process. I don't know if you saw that, but I posted a video of how I use reply.io to basically automate that.
Wow.
And then it ties into whatever your CRM is. I show how to do that using Zapier. So I think you hit it. It's really exciting for me to hear that Keller Williams does that for its agents. So it's kind of interesting.
I was shocked. And they said they're coming out with where when you put the lead in there, it'll search to see if they have a Facebook page.
They got an interesting system.
Yeah, and they haven't rolled this out yet, but they're telling us that it's coming. And then they'll notify you. They gave the example of let's say you're watching whoever it is, Johnny Smith, and they'll notify, hey, Johnny Smith just got a new puppy on Facebook. So comment. So you're like, oh, that's a reason for me to say, hey, Johnny.
That's interesting. So they're using social monitoring, basically, of tags or profiles to pull that data in. Are they using Salesforce for that, or what are they using?
They have their own. They bought their own company.
And, they did. Wow.
Mm-hmm. So they're doing it themselves. They bought the. They had someone else that was doing it, and then they bought the software, and it's all in house now.
Wow, that's incredible. I'll have to keep my eyes open for that. I'll have to see if I can weasel my way in there. And the Keller Williams guy has written a book that's actually really good, which is The One, I think, or The One Thing, right?
Yeah, he's got that book, and then The Millionaire Realtor, I think.
The Millionaire Realtor.
Pretty good, too. I'm really reading that now, and The One Thing's really good, too.
Cool. You went to Las Vegas for the 10X Growth Con, and I know we talked a little bit about that. What was kind of your takeaway from that, and what was your experience?
So a lot of good content. I don't have my notes in front of me here, but there were some really great speakers. Grant, I loved how he kind of pared down the sale experience about you have an idea, you have to get someone's attention.
Right.
Have the intent.
Yep.
The idea may be, oh man, I've got this great product. Now I've got to get attention. So you want to post it out on Facebook or let people know about it and draw attention to yourself. And then the intent is, I want you to have this so it'll make your business grow. And then, contact them, follow up with them, and then serve them. And I love what he said is sometimes you can move that up in the process. You know, you can have the idea and get their attention and then try and close them on the deal. You don't have to go through all the steps all the time. And he did the example of this by, usually you go to one of these conferences and it's kind of warm and fuzzy. They start to give you a lot of content and then they will maybe pitch you something. No, they had the big intro. The first thing is Jared, who's his number one guy, walks out on stage and goes, hey, we want you to buy this. And
they were hammering you right away.
Get it in the beginning so it's fresh out. And then, okay, now we're going to have a great show. Let's get started. He started selling right in the beginning.
That's crazy.
He got our attention with the opening, and then they sold us, tried to close us right there.
That's funny.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
And I think I mentioned, I have a couple of events that I'm just going to, I've sort of announced the one, which and I think the takeaway for that event is don't be afraid to sell. I don't want to I don't know. I guess I have to think about how that works. But it was obvious from the stage that, Russell Brunson, I think, set the ultimate example, right?
He was amazing.
Yeah, which was, he got everybody, 1,200 people or something, to buy ClickFunnels, which is a really good platform, great software platform. But it's, he had people streaming to tables with little sheets of paper with their order, and it was threefold, so it was the carbon copy of the order. It was old school, right? And he built it. Was really interesting. I think his structure was really cool, but it was also, I think someone else had mentioned in the group, which was, okay, anyone else have deal fatigue?
Yeah,
I have a deal for you.
That was the only disappointing thing to me, was that every single guy got up there to pitch.
Right.
And I would have liked more content and less pitching.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, you're like, I'm just tired of hearing, like, okay, I can walk out now because they're just going to try and sell me now. Like, they gave me a little bit of content in the beginning. Now that I know the rest is just the pitch.
I think day two is, so day one was supposed to be this $1 billion sales summit. I'm not sure how much sales content was in there, but it was good. There was good speakers. And day two were all the younger, like, internet marketer type guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Russell Brunson set the stage. Well, he's not that young, but he looks young.
He's 25.
But I think he set the tone where, Russell Brunson's 25?
No, I said he looks like.
Oh, yeah. He looks like a baby, right?
Yeah.
He's not that young. I think he might be older than me, but he set the tone where all these guys, you knew they were going to pitch because that's what they do on the internet, and it's unabashed, right? But day three, I thought, was really positive, where there was, I think Michael Burt was on day three, and Lewis Howes and Tim Story, and then Tim Grover kicked butt, like he did great. And Grant Cardone and Elena Cardone were really good on that day too. So it kind of like gave us a little bit of a reprieve on day three.
Thank you.
It's kind of crazy. So I want to be conscious of your time. I'm gonna wrap this up with two questions.
Okay.
And the first one is, how are you, Melanie, changing the world?
You know, I think it's by getting people's great stories out there and not keeping them all to themselves, but exposing them to the world and sharing their stories with the world, whether it's for their business, their expertise, or I'm really big on leaving a legacy. I've done a TEDx talk on leaving a legacy.
Oh, great.
And I just think that's huge. And it comes with information, too. You know, if you're not going to leave your information behind, then you're not helping the generations to follow. So success leaves clues, and so does failure. So I'm really passionate about telling your story, leaving a legacy, and helping the next generations behind you. I just think it's so important. And I think we have a vehicle to do that.
That's amazing. I love that answer. The final thing that I'll wrap up on, and I always put my guests on the spot at the end, which is, when we have interesting guests on, we want you to nominate someone that is also an interesting guest that keeps with kind of the themes that we talk about, expert or entrepreneur. We usually talk about digital product creation, but also automating marketing, sales, and support. So sometimes it's about the entrepreneurial journey. Sometimes they're an expert in one of those areas. So I want you to nominate someone to appear on another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast.
See, now I'm going to be really, I got to get my business partner, because she does all the tech for us.
Okay.
All the back end.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Stuff.
Yep.
And like, she's the one who got us on Alexa, but she's way more knowledgeable on the technology side. And I just think she'd be a great guest, Jen Foster from Elite Online Publishing.
Okay, so Jen Foster, you've been nominated. That should hopefully be an easy introduction.
Yep.
And Melanie, I want to thank you for appearing on this. I know we could go on and on between the two of us. We both have the ability probably to keep talking. So, but I found this has been, it's been really nice to get to know you. And I'm glad to hear your perspective on things. And I love the work that you're doing with authors and people that are non-traditional authors. So thank you very much for the work that you do.
Thanks, Michael. It's been a pleasure to be here today. Honor to be here. Thanks.
And this has been another, this is a special episode of Automate and Grow. And we will see you on with Jen, hopefully on another special episode. Was Jen in the program, by the way?
Yeah, she was at TEDx with me.
Oh, she was? Great. Okay, so we can get some perspective on that as well.
Yep.
That's amazing. All right, well, I'm going to wrap this up. Thank you very much. And this has been another episode of Automate and Grow.
This has been an episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. Check out other episodes for interesting topics on how to grow, innovate, and automate your business. Subscribe or like us on iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, or on our website at www.automategrow.biz, and get your copy of the book Automate and Grow at Amazon today.